NBC News World Headquarters in New York. This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. At the beginning of the holiest week on the Christian calendar, churches were packed all over the world today. And when ISIS targeted Egypt's Christian minority with bombings at two churches in cities north of Cairo, the loss of life and devastation were extensive. A state of emergency has been declared and the military deployed across the country. The attacks come as Pope Francis is set to visit Egypt later this month, a trip the Vatican says will go on as planned. Our Matt Bradley is in Cairo tonight.
A day of devotion turned to horror. A crowded Palm Sunday Mass at St. George's Church in Tanta, north of Cairo, ripped apart by what police believe was a bomb placed under a pew. Hours later, a suicide bomber at St. Mark's Church in Alexandria. Security camera footage shows a man blowing himself up just feet away from a playing child after police stopped him from entering the church. That officer, now hailed as a hero. The twin bombings have left at least 43 dead, more than 100 injured, and the Middle East's largest Christian community in shock. Many of the dead are children. The situation is painful, a relative of one of the victims said. Why weren't proper measures taken to protect the people? ISIS quickly claimed responsibility for both attacks, fulfilling a pledge made in February to target Egyptian Christians. ISIS attacks Christians with horrifying regularity. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi met with President Trump just last week. The two leaders pledged to fight ISIS terror together.
And I just want to say to you, Mr. President, that you have a great friend and ally in the United States and in me.
Mr. Trump tweeting after today's attacks, he has great confidence in the Egyptian leader. But experts are not confident in what so far appears to be President Trump's unclear Middle East policy.
ISIS and its affiliates' attacks against the two churches really show the inability of President Trump to understand the complexity and the gravity of the crisis in the Middle East.
A vulnerable minority for whom ISIS remains the top concern. In the aftermath of these truly terrible attacks, many Egyptian Christians are turning their anger on the government. There were protests in Alexandria today demanding better security. And in addition to announcing a three-month state of emergency, President Sisi has fired a top Ministry of Interior official. Kate?
Matt Bradley in Cairo tonight. Matt, thank you. In this country, the manhunt intensified today for a heavily armed suspect who authorities say stole more than a dozen high-powered guns in Wisconsin and sent President Trump an anti-government manifesto. NBC's Blake McCoy has the new details.
The desperate hunt for Joseph Jakubowski stretching into a fifth day, a man authorities fear may be planning to attack schools, churches, or government officials. Today, 50 miles from where he was last seen on surveillance cameras, security stepped up at churches.
We enhanced our entry area by having ushers and deacons at the doors. The doors were all locked. The local police department were fantastic.
Service at this church in Sun Prairie was canceled after reports of a man asking suspicious questions earlier in the week.
Well, we don't know if this guy is the same person. We can't answer that question, but we're just doing what we can to make sure that everybody is prepared.
Today, another possible sighting reported in Darlington, Wisconsin, about 65 miles from Janesville.
We quite frankly don't know if he's in Janesville, if he's in Wisconsin, or if he's someplace else in the nation.
400 tips have poured in, but so far, Jakubowski has eluded more than 150 law enforcement officers searching for him.
I mean, you hear it on the news, well, it's happening over here, it happened over there. It's just like, this is like, wow, in Janesville?
Police say Jakubowski has a bulletproof vest, a helmet, and an arsenal of weapons stolen from this gun store.
We know that there were long guns that were stolen. We know that handguns were stolen.
The biggest clue authorities are working on, this cell phone video taken as he mailed a 161-page manifesto addressed to President Trump.
Revolution. It's time for change.
Police have now interviewed the man who took the video and say he is cooperating.
Today is the day. So remember this face.
Game time.
He doesn't care if you know him. This is the end game for him. There's no escape plan. The only plan is the attack plan.
Kids here in Janesville are on spring break this week, so schools were already going to be closed tomorrow. Police are stepping up patrols at other potential targets and warn this man could be anywhere. Kate?
Very scary. Blake McCoy, thank you. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson arrived in Europe tonight for crucial and highly anticipated meetings with the Russians. The two countries have traded condemnations and warnings since the U.S. fired cruise missiles at Syria last week after that chemical weapons attack on civilians. It's just one of the tensions complicating the relationship between Moscow and Washington. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell has more on what's at stake.
Under the radar, no more. Rex Tillerson, the media wary,
no comment today.
Low-key Secretary of State, is emerging weeks after taking office. Today, his first Sunday show interviews.
I hope that Russia is thinking carefully about its continued alliance with Bashar al-Assad.
A stern message Tillerson is expected to take to Russia, where he will meet with the foreign minister this week. With his own established ties to Vladimir Putin from his former oil executive days. A Putin meeting may also be possible.
How he reacts to Secretary Tillerson, the kinds of signals he says in terms of the future, that's what we need to be watching.
Tense relations, damaged by Russia's protection of Syria's Assad regime, and clouded by Putin's interference in the 2016 election, with ongoing investigations by Congress and the FBI. In Moscow, NBC's Bill Neely.
Here in Moscow, the Kremlin wants clarity from Rex Tillerson. What is America's strategy in Syria? What about Assad? Does President Trump want better relations with Putin or more missile strikes? Agreement? Unlikely.
Today, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley blasted Russia over Syria's chemical attack.
Their initial reaction was, Assad didn't do it. The Syrian government didn't do it.
In 2013, Putin promised that Russia's influence would stop Assad's use of chemical weapons.
Russia has failed in that commitment, and the result of their failure has led to the killing of more children and innocents.
The Tillerson mission to Moscow comes as the White House national security team is reshaped. New tonight, KT McFarland, chosen by ousted advisor Michael Flynn, is out, offered an ambassadorship. Following the removal of political strategist Steve Bannon from the National Security Council by new National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster.
Steve Bannon provides the president with advice on a broad range of issues and will continue to do so.
As National Security Advisor McMaster says, Russia should be compelled to explain how it could not have known in advance about the chemical attack in Syria when some of its own personnel are stationed at the very base from which that attack was launched. A tough issue for Secretary Tillerson in Russia this week. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell down in Florida. Kelly, thank you. The U.S. is also engaging in a powerful show of force tonight aimed at North Korea. A U.S. Navy strike group is heading toward the Korean Peninsula after days of growing tensions. NBC's Janice Mackey-Frayer is in Seoul, South Korea. Janice?
Kate, tension here is nothing new, but a different sort of anxiety has been triggered by the U.S. strike on Syria, widely seen in this region as a message to Kim Jong-un that the U.S. is also willing to strike North Korea. The U.S. military has ordered the USS Carl Vinson to head towards the Korean Peninsula because of recent provocations. This American show of force is being met with a defiant vow by the North to bolster its own defenses, saying the strike on Syria is justification for the regime's needs for a nuclear arsenal. The concern of a U.S. strike on North Korea, counterattack. The North has missiles pointed at Seoul, and there are 28,000 U.S. military personnel stationed in South Korea. President Trump has been pressing China's leader to rein in the North. The two met face-to-face for the first time last week, just 48 hours after North Korea's latest missile test. So these are cautious times, with the U.S. weighing options, North Korea marking key anniversaries this month, and speculation that Kim Jong-un may be preparing for a sixth nuclear test. Kate?
Janice, thank you. There are new details tonight about the suspect in that deadly truck attack in Stockholm, Sweden, 2 days ago. Officials say the suspect, who's from Uzbekistan, was ordered to leave Sweden in December after he was denied permanent residency. Police also said a second suspect in the attack has been arrested. Four people were killed. There's a showdown coming tomorrow in Alabama, where the governor faces a hearing in the legislature on whether he should be impeached. He is accused of misusing his office. And as NBC's Sarah Dolliff reports, it all stems from a personal relationship.
What began as an alleged affair between Alabama's governor and an aide is now at the center of an effort to impeach him. Hearings set to begin this week against two-term governor Robert Bentley. A sex scandal engulfed his administration last year when graphic recordings of phone conversations between the governor and top aide Rebecca Mason came to light.
When I stand behind you and I put my arms around you.
While the governor denies having a physical affair with the woman, he apologized to his constituents on Friday, vowing to remain in office.
I do not plan to resign. I have done nothing illegal.
Two separate investigations by a legislative committee and state ethics officials found probable cause that Bentley violated ethics and campaign law by using state law enforcement officers and other resources to try to keep the recordings from going public.
Let's end this embarrassment to our state right now.
If he's found guilty, Bentley would be only the ninth governor in U.S. history to be removed from office. His fate now in the hands of the Alabama legislature. Sarah Dolliff, NBC News.
Cities and towns throughout the United States are waiting to see what becomes of the president's plan to rebuild the country's infrastructure. The need was highlighted dramatically over the last couple of weeks by derailments at Penn Station here in New York City. We get more from NBC's Morgan Radford.
Two derailments in just 11 days.
I will be directing you the safest way to evacuate the train.
Train service coming to a halt in New York, leaving hundreds of thousands of commuters stranded.
I'm standing on the train. I'm paying so much money. It's not worth it to me.
Experts say the derailments prove our nation's railway system is simply too old.
I think it should serve as a wake-up call. It's a realization of how fragile the entire system is.
Take New York's Penn Station. More than 10 million riders pass through each year. That's more than 1,300 trains per day, double the number from the 70s.
It's nothing short of catastrophic.
John D. Porcari is the current head of the Gateway Project, a $24 billion proposal designed to double the capacity of trains along the Northeast Corridor, including Penn Station.
This is the most urgent infrastructure project in America. It can't go forward without the federal commitment. It can't. This is completely in jeopardy.
President Trump has promised a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. But when he revealed his budget in March, it showed a $2.4 billion cut from the transportation budget. Top Democrats say our future depends on new improvements.
It's vital to our Northeast economy, and it makes a world of sense.
The reality of it is, this is also bigger than just New York.
This is a national issue, and whether it's the locks and dams in the Midwest, or it's aging bridges and tunnels, highway systems, airports, we are way behind as a country.
A country moving forward one step and one ride at a time.
On Wednesday, President Trump told the New York Times he planned to present a $1 trillion infrastructure plan to Congress, but wouldn't specify whether proposals like the Gateway Project would in fact be included, Kate.
Morgan, thank you so much. For a lot of us, concerns about computer hacking are focused on the personal stuff, stolen identities or PIN numbers or someone looking at your emails without permission. But tonight, the 7 million residents of Dallas have proof that a hack attack can mean city-sized trouble. As Steve Patterson reports, what happened there is raising the alarm for a lot of American cities and towns.
It sounded like an air raid over Dallas.
That is not a drill.
On Friday night, all 156 of the city's emergency sirens screaming in unison into the early hours of Saturday morning.
They said the alarms are coming from all over Dallas.
The cause? Not a storm, but a cyber attack, creating fear and confusion, clogging 911 for hours, more than 4,000 calls. The culprit? Unknown.
This is like finding a needle in a haystack.
The incident comes after years of warnings from the cybersecurity community about the danger hacking can cause to vital infrastructure. Homeland Security statistics pinpoint nearly 300 attacks reported on critical systems in 2015 alone.
Certainly those parts of our infrastructure that is readily accessible is vulnerable to these attacks.
Texas is one of the five most hacked states, according to the tech firm Digital Guardian, second only to California, where in San Francisco, an attack took light rail ticket machines offline during one of the busiest shopping weekends last year.
We have reached a point where cybercrime is now pervasive. These kinds of attacks are happening all the time.
Sounding the alarms from the cybersecurity community for American cities. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Everyone knows exercise is good for us, but cycling is getting some new attention now. Turns out it can help relieve the symptoms of Parkinson's, a chronic and progressive disease that gets worse as people age. Our medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres, on a simple and surprising discovery.
You would never guess that Judd Stover has suffered from Parkinson's disease for the last 7 years. Because he doesn't have tremors, he doesn't have muscle stiffness, and his feet don't shuffle when he walks. One big reason he's so active and symptom-free, he said yes to a surprising new therapy.
But you can slow it down even more and better by doing this stuff. Where do I sign up?
What did he sign up for? A clinical trial using a simple treatment.
How are you feeling?
Feeling good.
Cycling. Researchers at the Cleveland Clinic are finding that cycling is helping patients stop the symptoms of Parkinson's and can even do something that medicine can't. Slow down the progression of the disease itself. Neuroscientist Jay Alberts made a stunning discovery. Cycling can increase certain proteins in the brain that help movement and cognitive function.
And so these changes are similar to what happens when they're on medication.
Exactly right.
When you have medication, you have an increased activation in this area. You have a similar increase in activation following exercise. So exercise is in fact, medicine.
To activate those changes in the brain, patients have to do what's called forced exercise, which means they're working a lot harder than they're used to working. But it's that hard work that gives them the benefits.
So to get those benefits, what's the formula? Cycling 3 times a week for 45 minutes at 80 to 90 RPMs.
You know, I don't care what condition you're in. That's pretty strenuous.
That formula has worked so well, Alberts has taken the research out of the lab and into the gym.
The program returned me to normal, or very close to normal.
At 60 different YMCAs across the country, now offering classes called Pedaling for Parkinson's.
It was like turning on a light bulb. And that was the difference between pedaling and not pedaling.
Each pedal stroke, a step towards living a better life with Parkinson's disease.
That's my goal, better every day.
Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Cleveland.
Finally tonight, a relic of World War II is about to ply the waters once again, this time in friendlier territory. It's all about a labor of love for a man who came of age serving aboard it and never forgot the experience. The story from NBC's Kerry Sanders in New Orleans.
At 92 years old, it's natural to look back at history.
The invasion fleet is moving towards France.
Especially when you were part of it, as Jim Neerson was.
Welcome aboard, sir. Great to have you back.
That's Jim in World War II, a member of the crew on PT Boat 305. And Jim today.
You don't see any enemy ships out there, do you?
No.
On the very boat where this 18-year-old boy quickly became a man.
We all know that war is hell, but you don't think about it being hell. You just do your job.
It's a marvel that this PT boat Jim was on is now once again operational. Decommissioned as war surplus, she was used as a tour boat in New York City, an oyster boat in the Chesapeake Bay, until volunteers at the World War II Museum in New Orleans began a 10-year passion project. Refashioning her mahogany hull? Easy compared to finding original parts.
We got pieces from all over the United States and all over the world. The radar dome came from a collector in Australia. The engines came from a farmer in Indiana who used them in tractor pulls. We found the sight for the torpedoes on eBay.
On eBay?
On eBay, came out of Pennsylvania. The only one we've seen in 10 years.
Man, here comes!
Everything is as it was during World War II, except the machine guns are not real and there is no ammunition.
In New Orleans, the maiden voyage for paying customers set for later this month. Tickets expensive, $350, but rides are already sold out for weeks.
You and so many other people, thankfully, changed the course of history.
Probably had a little bit to do with it.
Just like the greatest generation, you're modest.
PT-305 and crew sank enemy ships in the Mediterranean. Now she's a living link to the rapidly disappearing greatest generation. Kerry Sanders, NBC News on Lake Pontchartrain, New Orleans.
Great addition down in New Orleans. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.